Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
We're gonna give the boys a hand. Stand up and sing for Leeds United. They are the greatest in the land.
You are listening to the Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with John McKenzie and Josh Hobbs from All Stats, aren't we? It's a big show tonight because the international break is over. The Championship is back. Leeds have a tricky tie against Barnsley on the weekend. Barnsley very strong at home, but Leeds, we know their ambitions this year. It is back to the Premier League. It is all or nothing. They are not concentrating on any of the cups because they are going back to the big time. Well, it has been the international break. We're going to be talking about how some of the players have fared. Did it come at the right time, the wrong time? Are they refreshed? But first, shall I say, Josh, I believe you have a stat for us.
Yeah, that's if Patrick Bamford continues his current shots per 90, that's 3.09, his conversion rate of 22.22%, then he'll score another 27 goals this season, taking him to 31. Don't think that's too bad for someone that's highly criticised.
I'm going to do something brave now, because we're 3 minutes in of my first time on the Leeds Fan Show. And let it be known, I have a very soft spot for Leeds. Okay. I'll tell you a little bit about that later. But that stat, as much as I love it, impossible for Patrick Bamford to do that. I don't know if I'm going to maybe not make many friends. I might make a few enemies.
Are you a Palace fan?
I'm not a Palace fan, no.
I know quite a few Palace fans cannot stand Patrick Bamford.
I don't know if we have any rivalry, but I'm an Arsenal fan.
Okay.
Is that okay with you two? Is that all right?
That's fine,
for the next
yeah.
hour,
yeah,
am I allowed?
I think
to...
right.
We come between the Millwall show and the Chelsea show, so, you know, they're like...
So this is
an Arsenal fan's great. Yeah,
this is, if me being an Arsenal fan, Chelsea and Millwall, this is a highlight for me. This is the 1 hour. Hopefully I can have some fun.
Yeah.
But this is the Leeds show. Leeds fans, what do you think of Patrick Bamford then? Is there a mix? What's the consensus between Patrick Bamford? Because on the outside, I watch the Championship all the time. I'm not completely sold on him yet.
Yeah, and not a lot of Leeds fans aren't either. So you're in the right company here. But the reason why we put this stat out is there's a lot of questions being asked about Patrick Bamford and his ability to score enough goals for Leeds to go up. And we were just having a chat actually on the way here just about whether or not Patrick Bamford is going to be good enough for us to get up. But one of the things that I think so interesting about the Bamford, his scoring rate and his conversion rate is that actually we're conceding so many fewer chances this season that actually, yeah, obviously his scoring rate matters and his conversion rate matters, but we're conceding so many fewer goals that actually that should be ameliorated a little bit by the fact that we are so good defensively. But that said, you know, everyone wants your striker to be scoring a lot. We've got Eddie Nketiah on the bench coming through. You'll know him well. And there's a lot of pressure for Nketiah to be brought on. So that's the sort of scenario we're in. Bamford not scoring enough. Nketiah chomping at the bit. So,
well, I think it's the perfect segue, because obviously if that is true and Bamford does go on to get another 27 goals, I'm going to be over the moon, let alone you two will be very delighted. But one player that he could make way for is Eddie Nketiah. Obviously, from an Arsenal point of view, firstly, very excited about his potential. He's a great prospect for us. We was a little bit surprised as a whole that maybe he wouldn't stay at Arsenal this year. You know, we could play him in the Cups, Europa League. We tend to play the youngsters a little bit. But Unai Emery felt for his benefit, his development, you know, playing week in, week out in a physical league like the Championship would be beneficial to him. He hasn't started, but he has scored a few goals, a couple of key goals. After this international break, could you maybe see him now forcing his way into that side a little bit more, John?
Yeah, I think so. There's certainly the potential for him to be brought in. We've seen Bielsa try two strikers at front as well, usually at the end of games when we're chasing a goal. But it may be interesting to see if we do go with the 3-5-2 that we've been using. That's one way of getting both of them on the field at the same time. But I mean, that said, Nketiah is a great impact sub. It's great to be able to have him as an option off the bench. We had him coming on after about 60 minutes in the Swansea game, so he's getting a decent run out as well. So I think it will be a case of, with Bielsa teams, he doesn't like to chop and change a lot. He likes to keep players in form. He likes to keep players playing even if they aren't maybe quite as in form as you'd want them to be. So I think that Bamford probably has that starting berth for the time being, but it's just the ability to have a player who's of Nketiah's quality as a backup, so if anything happens he's in, and then it'll be the other way around, then it'll be Bamford trying to get his place back. So I think that we will see more of him as the season goes on.
Well, hopefully he can impress. Another side, North London side you've done business with, is obviously Spurs and Jack Clark. He's not playing much at the minute as well, Josh. Is he another one that could force his way into the side?
I find it hard to see where Clark gets in at the moment. He was brilliant for us in that time around Christmas last year. He was our game changer. But
he was that important?
Yeah, oh yeah. Like, every time we needed something, it was Jack Clark that came off the bench and delivered it. When he finally got in the starting lineup, which we were waiting for a long time, he absolutely destroyed Derby. And, I mean, that was one of the best full debuts that I've seen of a Leeds player. But after he got ill at Borough and collapsed, it was like a different Jack Clark. He didn't have that confidence anymore. And now that we've got too many lone players to fit in the match day squad, and with the addition of Costa, I just don't see where he's going to get in right now.
Yeah.
Well, he's struggling to get in the side. Let's look at let's take it back to the start of the Championship season. I know you lot would have covered it every week here on the show, but you did have that brilliant away win to Bristol City on the first game of the season, and a lot was made, you know, Jack wasn't in the side, Eddie Nketiah, and I watched it, I thought, wow, he's going to play, and then, you know, but it was typical Leeds, a brilliant win. Hernandez, I mean, he is... For me, the player that, you know, I want to watch in the Leeds team. He was actually in the team of the month, wasn't he, as well? So he's the one that seems to make you tick. Is almost, are you pleased with the strength in depth that you have, or in what is a long season? Because some of the times Leeds have been labelled as last year they should have got over the line, but maybe they peaked a little bit too early and they sort of ran out of steam. Is that a fair comment, John?
I don't know whether or not I would go all the way with that. I think it has to be said, we have to balance that with the statistical evidence, which was we did enough to win. Like, if we'd have played, I mean, this is the problem with stats. If we'd have played those few games an infinite number of times, we would have won more often than we lost. Obviously, we didn't play those games an infinite number of times, so it doesn't make a difference. But I think the thing that we've been talking about a lot on our channel is the way that Bielsa teams are based around this notion that you have a system and you can change players in and out of the system, and the beauty of the system is that you can then play the players to their strengths within that system. So we see it a lot with Gianni Alioski and Barry Douglas at left back. You can play either one of those two, but they have different skill sets, and when they play, Bielsa sets the team up in such a way as to emphasise their skill sets. So that's the beauty of what we have at Leeds, really, is, yeah, we do have a bit of depth on the bench, but we have also a system that allows you to bring in players and tweak things around, and you get something different. It's not just simply that you get a like-for-like replacement.
Well, Josh, it was the international break. Obviously, the Championship returns this weekend. Leeds do play Barnsley, but obviously obviously, the international break, has it come at the right time? Has it come at the wrong time? Obviously, hindsight will always tell us. But how disappointing was it for Leeds going into that international break, losing that momentum, you know, 1-0 defeat to Swansea and at home? Do you know, was the...
Yeah, I don't think that had a real effect. I mean, it was disappointing because we should have won the game. Like, we easily created the chances to win the game. I don't think it being either side of a break matters. Obviously, we want to come back now and win, but we would have wanted to come back to the next game and win anyway. Because I don't really buy into...
It's a long time, I guess, a long time to have that sort of thing hanging over you. But, I mean, at the same time, it feels as though the disappointment that we had immediately after the game has just sort of dissipated now, and it's just like we're now thinking, well, it's Barnsley, they're just outside the relegation zone. A lot of the underlying stats suggest they've been the worst team in the league so far, so it's probably the best team to have.
Really, would you say that about Barnsley? Because if they, you know, they beat Fulham on the opening day, they're very good at home. I know their league form sort of dipped after that, but there's no gimme, is there, facing Barnsley from who were promoted?
Yeah, and as we're going to talk to Doug later, but they've been very unlucky this season. They had 8 injuries going into the international break, which no one likes, and that coincided with them playing against Wigan, and Wigan, that's a game that they'll be looking at thinking, you know, this is a points battle for us. To go in that with like up to 8 players that, and some majority of them starting players as well, not available is a blow. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the underlying stats, it does suggest that they were a little bit lucky to get a win against Fulham. They should possibly have got the draw instead, and then everything else balanced up. But yeah, Stendhal's a great manager. He's one of these young German managers. He's come over. He knows his stuff. Last season he was tactically flexible, and he got them straight up in the season that he joined. He's obviously a good manager. So the question is whether or not you know, these little teething issues with injuries and the fact that they're in a new league and he's still sort of finding his feet. I think that you've got to take those into account too. But yeah, it's the sort of fixture you want to come back to after losing a game like that against Swansea.
Well, I know another issue you both wanted to highlight was Calvin Phillips and his contract. Where are we on that? What's the latest with that?
Well, he's signed. 5 years.
There we go.
whether he'll stay 5 years or not, I think is very much dependent on us going up. But it's definitely good news for us, and it's what the fan base has been desperate for.
How important is he to the team?
I think he's the linchpin. John and I have a few differing opinions.
Well, that is why I asked. But... I was trying to maybe not fish, but is there a little bit of... I don't want to say divide, because that seems like the opinions are very of the extreme, but is there a little mixed opinion on him between the Leeds fans?
I don't think there is.
No, there's not a mixed opinion.
I think the majority of Leeds fans love Calvin Phillips. I mean, yeah. I love Calvin Phillips as well. I'm just maybe a little bit more pragmatic about how well he's performed, mainly because I think, and this is something that we wanted to talk about with Liam Cooper as well, playing for Scotland this week and not performing very well. What impact does the team that you play for have on the ability that you have to play well? And I think that Calvin Phillips is playing in a team that really accentuates like his skill set. Were he to move somewhere else, and we were talking about this before we came on, if he'd have gone to Villa, would he have been as good as he's been at Leeds? And we neither of us think that would really have been the case. So, but in terms of the fan base, they love him, and rightly so. You know, he's a son of the city. He's had a great season.
They love his nan.
They love his nan.
His nan. The family are involved.
His nan did well in the documentary series. So, yeah, I don't think there's any questions there.
Well, let's talk about Liam Cooper then, because you was asking, you know, how can you perform maybe for your club and then your country? How is it different? How does it affect on you? It can have a mental effect if you're travelling away. Someone like Scotland, if they're not in the best results, then you have to come back for Leeds. What are your thoughts on this, John?
So for Liam Cooper, I think he plays really well in a Bielsa side where we are dominating possession all the time. So in terms of his the role he's playing in that team, it's very much a distributionary role. You know, he's got to move the ball around and help in the build-up phase. There's not many. I mean, we've been saying like that Leeds are giving away maybe four or five chances a game at the moment, which means that, you know, he's not seeing a huge amounts of events where he has to act as what you would think a classic defender would have to do. Whereas when he's playing for Scotland, that obviously changes. So again, the
quite
skill
considerably.
Yeah, exactly. So the skill set that you're then working with is entirely different. So that's what we mean when we say team effects. Like, what difference would Cooper playing for a team where they're suddenly they're sitting deep and they're seeing a lot of pressure that they have to absorb? How would that affect things? So yeah, I think that he plays well in a high possession team, but maybe not in a different style of football.
Well, different systems for different players. This is the Leeds Fan Show. Next, we're going to be talking to Kieran Maguire all about Leeds finances.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
You are listening to the Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with John McKenzie, Josh Hobbs from All Stats, aren't we? We are talking everything where Leeds are concerned. We were just talking about how the players have fared on the international break. A little while later, we will be looking at the game on the weekend versus Barnsley, but I'm delighted to say joining us on the phone now, Kieran Maguire, to talk all about Leeds finances. Kieran, an absolute pleasure to talk to you again. Earlier in the week, we were talking on the Newcastle Fan Show about the failed takeover bid in the summer with Mike Ashley. Well, now we turn our attentions to Leeds. How are Leeds' finances? Are they in order? And how was financial fair play? How big a part has that played in the last few seasons?
Well, I think Leeds were running a very tight ship under Mr. Cellino. Yeah, that could be because he didn't particularly want to spend a large amount of money. But what we saw in 2018 was that the dogs were released. The wage bill went up by 50% in a year. So the average wage for a Leeds player went from £10,000 to £15,000 a week. The club spent £28 million on players. It did sell some players as well to bring bring some money back. But the club clearly decided to invest in the playing squad, and they were nearly successful as a result of that going into 2019. I think what will happen this year, because FFP is based on a rolling three-year period, that they're going to have to perhaps put the brakes on a bit and get spending into a little bit more under control.
Hi, Kieran, it's John here. What impact do you think Leeds being promoted will have? Is it an all-or-nothing season for them? And if they don't go up, will their finances spiral?
No, I think the good thing about Leeds' accounts is that their borrowing is under control. They are without doubt the biggest side in the championship that's not receiving parachute payments, but parachute payments do distort the numbers. Leeds' total income was £41 million last season. Now that compares to parachute payments of about 42, 43 for some of the clubs that have just been relegated. So you can see that they're starting off, as are many clubs in the Championship, behind those clubs that have been relegated from the Premier League. But even so, Leeds are earning considerably more, and that's because they've got a massive commercial arm, and that they're very good at signing deals with sponsors and partners. And the fans are very keen to wear the famous shirt. So they're good in generating money, but they do have one hand tied behind their back because they don't have the benefit of the extra money from previously being in the Premier League for the last 3 or 4 years.
Thanks, Kieran. This is Josh. I read an interview with Graham Smith from the YEP that you gave earlier on in the summer. And I just wanted to check with you whether I've interpreted this correctly, but it seemed to be that you were saying that Radrizzani had chosen not to inject as much cash into the club as he could do under P&S rules. And the reason that I asked that is because Angus Kinnear said on multiple occasions that if there was a cash investment from, as we were hearing throughout the summer, potentially QSI, that we wouldn't be able to spend that because of these P&S rules. Which one is right? Because that confused me.
Right. I think what Angus was saying, if there was a huge investment from QSI, then if they decide to put £100 million into the club, under P&S rules, you can only put £8 million of that into your budget as such. So the rest would have to go on infrastructure spend or things of that nature. I mean, there are ways and means of getting around some of the FFP rules. I'm sure that's going to come up shortly.
you guessed it.
Just because you've got a new owner coming in, it doesn't automatically mean that you can double or treble your player recruitment budget or your wage budget because of the nature of the FFP rules, which effectively says you're allowed to lose $5 million a year, but you can top that up to a further $8 million, provided the owner puts money in the form of shares. Now, in 2018, Leeds did do that through the involvement with San Francisco 49ers. But I don't think, I do try to monitor all 92 clubs, so sometimes the memory's a bit hazy, but I don't think they've put in a similar £8 million into the P&S budget for 2019. Now, there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, there's no reason why the owner should be expected to subsidise the club, but it does mean that, therefore, the overall budget needs to be monitored with just a little bit more care.
So I guess following on from that, you mentioned that Chiellino was running a tight ship. Do you think that Radrizzani is now running a tighter ship than he was when he first arrived? And what do you think will happen if Leeds go up? Do you think that he will try and Mike Ashley it a little bit and do the bare minimum to keep the club in the league just so that he can cream off the profits from a TV ad revenues?
No, I don't think there's any evidence of that from his history, involvement with other sports entities. In terms of getting into the Premier League, instantly you've got an extra £100 million to play with. Now, that will get swallowed up very quickly. And a lot of that will go in the first season because clearly the manager will be wanting to recruit players and existing players would want pay rises. But actually, it tends to get worse in your second and third seasons as the expectations of fans grow, but also the expectations of players. If one of the players who's played well in the Championship, they will automatically get a lift up in their pay going into the Premier League due to their contracts. But if they then perform well in the Premier League for that first season, I can guarantee their agents will be knocking on this on the chairman's door and saying, he's only being paid 35, 40 grand a week, and therefore we want an extra 10 or 15 because that is sort of the going rate in the Premier League these days. So you can get away with things in your first season to a certain extent because the players have all got huge pay rises, but their expectations tend to grow as the club becomes more acclimatised to the Premier League. And also you're bringing in players from a lot of them from overseas as well, whose expectations are high.
That sounds great. I had a question about Derby, which I think a lot of Leeds fans feel. I think we feel it's unjust what's happened with Derby and the stadium sale, amongst other clubs doing that as well. But I was wondering, what do you see happening now with them and the EFL being sued by Borough, as has been coming out in the press? But also the independent assessment of the Pride Park sale?
Well, I think there's two issues. First of all, was it within the rules for them to sell the stadium to the owner, Noel Morris, and bank the profit for FFP purposes? Before 2016, that was not allowed. And then, for reasons which have never been made clear, the EFL changed the rules. So what they have done is within the financial fair play rules. So that's the first issue to deal with. The second issue is, again, you read the small print of the EFL P&S rules, it says that transactions must be conducted at a fair market price. Mel Morris says that he's had the club valued, or rather had the stadium valued, at £80 million, and who are we to question that? I think the issue from Borough's point of view, they'll be saying, but we'll hold on. If Pride Park is valued at £80 million, how come West Ham sold Upton Park, or the bowling ground, whatever you want to call it, they sold it for £40 million only 3 years ago? And you know, when you look at the world's most expensive cities, you tend to think Singapore, Tokyo, San Francisco, Paris, Hong Kong,
Derby.
London. Derby. Yeah, that's it. And it's a bit of a strange one, that, to me. So I think that's why Steve Gibson has queried it, and I think he's perfect within his rights to query it. If you look at the other stadia that have been sold, Hillsborough went for 60, Villa Park went for 56, and they've got both pretty big footprints. You know, they're both bigger land areas than Derby. I think the one which is perhaps most similar to Derby in terms of size and age and things of that nature would be the Majeski Stadium. And that was sold, again, to the owner 2 years ago for £26 million. Again, I'm not a property expert, and I don't know enough about the locality, but I'm surprised that property in Derby is worth three times the value of property in Reading. So, I'm just querying it, that's all.
Well, Kieran, you might not be a property expert, but you are a football finance expert. It is always such an insight to talk to you. A pleasure to have you on the Leeds show tonight. Thank you for giving us a little bit of your time. Kieran Maguire there, talking all about Leeds finances and what they can come to expect over the next couple of years. But next, we will be talking to Doug O'Kane, sports editor of the Barnsley Chronicle, all about that game on Sunday and the important 3 points that Leeds need.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You are listening to the Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with John McKenzie and Josh Hobbs from All Stats, aren't we? And that can only mean one thing. Yes, it is time for the opposition view. Leeds play Barnsley on Sunday, 12:30 kickoff there, in what is a massive game, especially just before the international break. Leeds went down to Swansea 1-0. Well, I'm delighted to say, joining us on the phone, Doug O'Kane, sports editor of the Barnsley Chronicle. Doug, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of your time tonight. Barnsley, what a brilliant start to the Championship. Beating Fulham, they was very underestimated there. Maybe Fulham overestimated from coming down from the Premier League into the Championship. But since that game, it's not really been great, has it? A little bit of indifferent form there.
Hi guys. Yes, that's right. Obviously, a great start to the season. It was a bit of a difficult summer with a lot of the promotion players being sold and lots of players being brought in, and no one really knew what to expect. But yeah, fantastic first result. Unfortunately, that's been a bit of a sort of anomaly really in the season so far in terms of results. They haven't won any of the six games after that. It was much better in the 0-0 draw with Wigan away from home just before the international break, because there have been some quite bad performances. But yeah, overall, 5 points from six, probably not the start they wanted, but also not disastrous, and they're not sort of marooned at the bottom of the league either. So it's not the end of the world for a newly promoted team so far.
Hi, Doug. It's John here. Just a question about the injury issues. Obviously, it's no secret that you've had a lot of injuries going into the international break, and not all of those injuries have sorted themselves out in that time. But obviously, you had the game against Wigan the game week before the international break started. I'm just interested that you played a different system that time around. How much do you think that was impacted by the injuries, or do you think that was a tactical decision by Stendhal?
Yeah, I think it was. mainly due to the injuries. I mean, they had eight of the first 11 out, really, or that I make as the first 11, which is incredible, you know, unprecedented, really, for most teams. So they really had to play players in different positions. They have a young guy called Toby Civic, who was signed as a centre-back. He's mainly been playing as a right-back, but he played in central midfield in that match. Did really, really well, in my opinion. They haven't really got any first-choice strikers at the moment, or certainly not sort of lead-the-line kind of players. So Malik Wilkes, the former Leeds youngster, was up front on his own, which isn't really a position he thrives in. I thought they were a better team than Wigan. They created better chances and should have won it, really. And that kind of performance and character, really, hopefully coupled with a lot of their better quality players coming back to the team, where it bodes pretty well for the future.
Mm. In terms of those injuries, then, have you got an update? Who are you expecting to be back for the Leeds game?
Yeah, there are a few, I think, coming back. Corley Woodrow will be back. He's a really important player. It looks very much likely he'll be back. He's not 100%, but they said they're optimistic, and he's been training the last 3 or 4 days, so I think he will be. He scored 19 goals last season. He only got 1 in 4 this season, but it was a spectacular goal against Charlton. Really brilliant volley from 25 yards into the top corner, and then he got injured in that same game. He hasn't played since, but he's massive for Barnsley, because since the sale of Kiefer Moore, he's the one sort of real proven goal scorer at the club, and you really can tell they miss him when he's not there. A few other players coming back. They've got Jacob Brown, a young player who's come through from an under-16 level all the way through to the first team. Had a breakthrough season last season at right wing. He hasn't played at all since April, but he is back fit now. I'm not sure whether he'll start, because obviously he's struggling with match fitness, but he was a real big important part of their promotion side last season. He adds quite a lot of quality to the team, so he may come off the bench. Then you've got Alex Morris, who obviously you'll know well from the Leeds side of things. He is back as well. He had a neck injury for the Wigan game, so he missed that, but he's back now. He did the press conference today, and it looks very much like he'll start. So that's some quite important players. There's some other ones. Bambo Diaby, a centre-back who they signed in the summer, and Cameron McGeehan, who's Mowat's usual midfield partner. They're sort of doubts for Sunday. I got the feeling there's an outside chance of them playing, probably less likely than some more unlikely than likely. And then there's a few other more long-term ones as well. So there's a real long list of them. But yeah, Mowat, Woodrow and Jacob Brown are the main ones that are coming back into the team. That's a big boost, because that's a lot of quality for Barnsley.
You mentioned Malik Wilkes earlier on. He's a player that quite a lot of Leeds fans, I'd say. I know that I was actually hoping we'd have a look at over the course of the summer and potentially keep. How do you think he's doing in the Championship?
Yeah, I think Barnsley were really pleased to get him, really. After the season he had with Doncaster Rovers last season, where he scored, I think, 16 goals and was, from what I can see, one of the best players in League One, scoring that many goals from the wing as a 20-year-old is really impressive. And Barnsley paid quite a lot of money in Barnsley terms for him, and were really happy to get him. So far, he started all but one game, he's been a bit tricky to assess him, because he's been played on the left wing quite a lot, which I think is the position they see him in. But he's also been played up front because of injuries to Woodrow. He's kind of, he's never really got a long run of games in one position to sort of show what he can do. He has had good games, and he scored a goal, a nice goal against Fulham, but it's more been glimpses of what he can do rather than had time to properly assess him yet. And he probably hasn't hit the ground running quite the way he'd liked. But it's been tricky going into a new team who haven't made the best of starts in the season. But he's certainly a player who fans are expecting a lot from. I think most people saw him as the standout signing of the summer, and they're hoping that he can add that little bit of quality and X factor to get Barnsley the points they'll need to at least stay up this season.
In terms of the you mentioned the Leeds connection there with a couple of players, there's also Apahalmo that you signed in the summer as well. Do you think that's going to play much of a part in the game? Do you think the players will be, I mean, obviously it's a Yorkshire derby as well, but do you think that there'll be a bit more of a bite to this game than perhaps other games in the Championship?
Well, Alex Morgan was speaking this morning in the pre-match press conference, and he did say it gives him a little bit more motivation playing against his old club, but sure he's motivated for every game, and I think that's probably the same with the other players as well. Obviously, the likes of all of them, really, because there's Clark Adora as well. I know he didn't play very much for Leeds, but he might not play for Barnsley either on Sunday, although I think he might have an outside chance of playing at left back due to a suspension to Ben Williams. But so there's four of them there, Ham and Malik Wilkes as well. They all sort of obviously didn't make the grade at Leeds, hence why they've sort of transferred to Barnsley. So they've obviously got plenty of motivation and to sort of prove their, you know, maybe to Leeds and in three of their cases to Bielsa that he should have kept them. So yeah, I had a little bit of an extra element to that, but I think realistically Mowat and Wilkes will start. I'm not sure, it's probably a 50-50 chance. There's a couple of other players who could play at centre-back. But yeah, so they're quite a fairly healthy ex-league contingent in the Barnsley starting lineup or the squad.
I was doing a few calculations on big chances earlier on. And Barnsley come out second least in the Championship for big chances created. Would you say, watching the games yourself, that you feel you're lacking in creativity?
I suppose so, yeah. Especially away from home, I think. The game, obviously this game's at home, but the matches at Sheffield Wednesday and Birmingham City, which they lost 2-0, I mean, Barnsley, they just didn't really look anything like the team that got promoted last season. They sort of just hung on and didn't really offer much at all, and then gave the lead to the opposition by mistakes, passing it around in front of their box. And I mean, they were trying their best, and there was no question of the work ethic, but it just didn't really seem like as much of a plan to, like you say, create stuff and test the opponents. In other games, though, Charlton at home, Fulham in the first game, and Wigan away, they have looked good, and they have made some good passing moves and opened up and scored, and, you know, not created hatfuls of chances, but enough chances that if they'd taken them, they could have won the game. So I think with the injuries that they've had and the fact that they're still getting used to the Championship level, I don't think it's too much of a major concern at the moment, though, that hopefully when they get their sort of main attacking players back, like Woodrow and like Brown and a few others, they will start creating more chances.
Doug, well, I need to put you on the spot. It is that time. I'm going to ask for a score prediction, but please, if you could remember, this is the Leeds Fan Show, so be careful what you say.
Okay. It is a Leeds Fan Show, but obviously I'm pleased for Barnsley fans as well. So I will say that Barnsley are going to turn up and give another good performance like they did against Fulham, but I'll go for...
4-1. 4-1?
Go for 1-1.
Oh, I was much more preferred it when it was 4-0. I couldn't wait for that game. Doug, always a pleasure to talk to you. Doug O'Kane, sports editor of the Barnsley Chronicle. Just very quickly, I do turn my attention to you two, the Leeds fans in the studio. Doug, Sam, 4-4. John, what is your prediction for the weekend?
I think it will be a fairly comfortable game. I think Leeds will come out 2-0 winners.
2-0 for John. Josh, do you agree?
Well, I was going to say that, but I'm going to go 3. Bamford with 2.
Bamford with 2. Well, if the stats are anything to go by, and I've got to say, I'm loving this show because I do love a stat. He's going to get 27 more. I'm going to say...
You know it.
I'm going to say Leeds 3-2. So we're all predicting quite a few goals here. A bit of a goal fest. Well, it is a massive game on the weekend. Leeds versus Barnsley this Sunday, 12:30. Next, though, it is time for those listener questions.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
You're listening to the Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with John McKenzie, Josh Hobbs from All Stats, aren't we? It is stats galore. I must say, I love a stat. I absolutely love a stat. Well, this is the Leeds Fan Show. We were just talking about the Barnsley game, which is on Sunday. A massive game there. We heard from Doug O'Kane. We heard from John. We heard from Josh on their score prediction. But it's time now to hear from you because it is the listener questions. There is a lot of listener questions. I hope you two are ready. I'm sure you will be with the stats, but with the knowledge. The first question about Adam Forshaw. Does Adam Forshaw play La Pausa or is he just too slow in the transition? And that is from Binky.
I should say that La Pausa, for people who don't know, is obviously a Spanish word which references when players know to hold the ball a little bit longer because it changes the way that the opposition are structured.
I'm so glad you explained that, John, because I didn't know.
Yeah. So the question with Forshaw always is, does Adam Forshaw slow down Leeds' transition? When he gets the ball, a lot of Leeds fans would rather see someone like Jamie Shackleton because Shackleton tends to pick the ball up. He's young and tends to drive with the ball. And there's nothing better, is there, as a football fan than seeing a player pick the ball up in the midfield area and just drive.
Shades of Lewis Cook.
Yeah, exactly. We've been spoiled at Leeds for that. So the question is whether or not actually Forshaw is slowing down our transition when we pick the ball up. Is he making it worse for us to create attacking opportunities? My answer to that would be, well, we're a possession based football side. We are often playing against teams who are sitting deeper anyway, and playing quickly on the counter only really works if you have a lot of space in front of you. Leeds aren't really seeing that very much this season. Teams are either sitting in a low block or sitting in a mid block, which just means that they're waiting for you to come onto them a little bit more. So playing quickly actually doesn't really help you very much. So what Leeds are trying to do is they're trying to retain possession of the ball, move it up the field and then get it into their wide area so that they can play the ball around and hopefully work it to the other side where there should be isolated players. So for me, I have no problem whatsoever with the way that Adam Forshaw plays. I think people who do have a problem with the way that Forshaw plays don't actually have a problem with Adam Forshaw. They have a problem with how Marcelo Bielsa wants Leeds to play football.
Josh, do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I just really enjoy John's Forshaw love. He's quite vicious about people that don't feel the same.
It's definitely there for sure. Oh, come on, dear. Solo rent from me. But this next question, someone who seems familiar, I'm not quite sure. I think this question's from Josh Hobbs.
To be fair, I sent this 1-2 weeks ago. I didn't send this to myself.
You are really trying to bank double airtime, and this is not quite how it works on Love Sport Radio. But Josh's question, I'll ask it to John then, maybe. With Tyler Roberts stepping up his training and on the way back soon, where is he most likely to get minutes this season? As a striker, non-10, on the wing, he did very well last season at number 10, but it is working well there, and now he's the third-choice striker.
Yeah, that's a really tough one. He's going to have to work his way into the team, as we were saying before. You know, Bielsa doesn't just let people walk back in, but it's not even like there's any weak spots in the team at the moment. So I think that he played best before he got injured as a 10. And I think that's probably still the best option he has, I think, really, of making it back into the team. We've not really cracked the 10 position. We play Mateus Klich there, but he really is a sort of 8, a more advanced 8, just ahead of Forshaw. So I'm going to say I think he would play as a 10, but I'm interested to hear what
Josh, what do you think about that question?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great question.
Yeah, who sent it in?
They really think.
They take it serious, and that's what I want on this show, commitment, invested in Leeds.
That's it. Well, I think the reason that I asked it is because I also feel like John said that he's probably best in that number 10, although he did play well in the short time that he played number 9 for Leeds when we had Bamford and Roof out injured last year. But I now see, obviously, as John says, Klich is playing there. We know that if we need to make a change, I think it's more likely that Klich comes off, Hernandez comes inside, Costa comes on the right. So I don't know where Roberts fits in there. We did see him once or twice on the left, so perhaps he could replace Harrison. I don't know, but it's a good problem to have because he's an excellent player. Yeah. But
well, talking about players, the next question is about injury woes. Which player would we miss the most if there was a long-term injury? And that is from Stephen Hill.
I mean, I think everyone would think Hernandez.
This is a difficult question.
He is the best player in the league, as far as I'm concerned. But I actually think perhaps we would be able to replace him because of Costa and shifting players around the system. The player we would most miss for me is going to be Cooper.
Mm, interesting.
John, do you disagree?
I would expect you to say Calvin Phillips then, because I don't think we really have I mean, I guess we could play foreshore there, and that's what Bielsa said today in his press conference. But I think we would feel as though the reason why we've been so good this season is because we've had those three midfielders in that orientation every single game, and that makes it just makes everything work for us. So as soon as you're losing one midfielder, I think you're probably going to end up losing something of that, with the maybe the exception of Click. But Cooper, yeah, interesting, because I think like Ben White's been the centre back.
Ben White's been amazing, but for me, the reason Ben White has been so good, although he still obviously played well with Berardi against Stoke, but we've basically had Cooper dominating in the air and Ben White's able to come out and play, bring the ball out. He's amazing at interceptions, Ben White, but quite often it might be Cooper marking the striker if it's a one striker system, Ben White clearing up. And I think if that had to swap to Ben White marking that striker because Berardi was in, I'm not sure if it would be the same.
Yeah. That's good. I'm going to say Pablo, though.
Pablo. It was an easy answer. Okay. The next question is about contracts. What is your thoughts on the massive contracts the club have given out this week to players? Are we seeing a real shift at the club on the long-term vision? And when was the last time we gave out a five-year contract? That question is from Barney.
I have absolutely no idea when we last gave out a five-year contract. It may be the
John,
case
you with the stats, you
yeah,
don't know.
Sorry, that's not the sort of stat that I know. That's, that's
gutted.
Like, that's history, isn't it?
Nice save.
I don't know. It's nice to see, obviously, Calvin Phillips getting his contract, but players like Cooper and Dallas as well announced this week. And questions about whether or not Click's going to get a contract update in the next few months.
Phil
as well.
Hay says it's close.
It's close, okay. So I think one of the things that's been great about having Bielsa at the club is it just feels so much more professional. Like everything that's happening is done for a reason. We got rid of over 30-ish players this summer off our books, and it's just little things like that where you think you're just tidying up the wage bill stuff.
How
like
important
that.
Is that, John? Sorry to interrupt you, but people, obviously as fans, we're thirsty for transfer knowledge. We want to sign as many players as possible, but it's just as important to get trim that fat, isn't it, and get rid of the deadwood. People don't realise that.
Yeah, and I mean there was players in on our books who were just never going to play for us, and they just sit there. They often eke out the wage budget, or you end up doing a huge amount of administrative work trying to get them into other clubs because you can't get rid of them. So it's nice having a manager who knows what he wants. He likes a small squad anyway, but he also knows there's no point if there's a player who's never going to make it into your team. Don't keep them on. Move them on as well. It's good for their development as much as anything. And so when you start seeing these sorts of contracts being given out, you know that actually Bielsa wants these players. These are players that he wants on his team, and it's just nice to see that sort of thing happen.
All right, well, we're talking about the manager, style over success. If you had to choose, in theory, would you rather a season of class football but falling at the final hurdle like last year, or would you rather gain promotion by playing negative, boring football a la maybe under Tony Pulis? And that is from Joe Hill. It's a tough one, that, isn't it?
Question.
Can't have your cake and eat it.
Oh, what a horrendous question.
Sorry, let me change it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.